at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you.
This is Sean Lee, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. We live in a global world. We are all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the relationship between art and politics. Now to news headlines from Pacifica Radio.
For Pacifica, I'm Sharon Sabota. The suspect in the Brown University mass shooting, who authorities say was also the alleged suspect in the killing of an MIT professor, has been found dead. Providence Police Chief Oscar Perez said the 48-year-old was found yesterday and died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The images authorities had released led to a conversation with an individual who'd encountered the suspect. Nenez Valente was a former Brown University student and a Portuguese national who attended the same school as the deceased MIT professor Nuno F.C. Lucero. Brown University President Christina Paxton said that Brown is safe and has over 12,000 video cameras, but skirted questions in a press conference about the lack of cameras in the building where the mass shooting occurred.
Will there be more cameras in that building?
You know, I think we need to look back. We'll look at everything that is done, but I do not think a lack of cameras in that building, it had anything to do with what happened there.
United States forces have killed five more people on board vessels in the Pacific Ocean, bringing the death toll from the Trump administration's military campaign against alleged seaborne drug traffickers to at least 104 since September. The U.S. military Southern Command said that it carried out the lethal kinetic strikes on two vessels in the Eastern Pacific, again at the instruction of Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. The world's leading authority on food crisis says 100,000 Palestinians in Gaza are facing catastrophic levels of hunger, and the entire Palestinian territory faces starvation, despite a ceasefire now in its third month. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report out today says famine has been averted, but that can easily change. The UN warned Thursday Israel is still not allowing sufficient levels of aid to enter, as another newborn has frozen to death in the war-torn territory, and some 1.3 million people are living in tents. Antonio Renard is with the World Food Program, Palestine.
People are having, on an average, two meals per day, which is very different. If I look, it was only one meal per day in July. Access to food itself is not enough. The living conditions continue to be very dire into the Gaza Strip.
The IPC says all of Gaza will be classified as emergency, with nearly 2,000 people facing catastrophic levels of hunger through April. The Department of Health and Human Services has unveiled a series of regulatory actions designed to effectively ban gender-affirming care for minors. The sweeping proposals announced yesterday are the most significant moves of the Trump administration to restrict the use of puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and surgical interventions for transgender children, including cutting off federal Medicaid and Medicare funding from hospitals that provide such care. KPFA's Kennedy Quayle has more.
New Health and Human Services restrictions will effectively ban gender-affirming care for minors. It is the latest step by President Donald Trump's administration cracking down on transgender Americans. HHS Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr. announced the ban at a news conference.
This is not medicine. It is malpractice. We're done with junk science driven by ideological pursuits, not the well-being of children.
Kennedy says his declaration and the regulations are guided by what he called, quote, gold standard science, end quote, and by Trump's week one executive order that called gender-affirming care for kids, quote, chemical and surgical mutilation, end quote. Under the new policy, people under the age of 18 will be prohibited from accessing puberty blockers, hormones, and surgical operations that HHS lists as gender-affirming care. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz said one of the goals of the regulations is to prohibit Medicaid funding from going to hospitals that perform gender-affirming care. He said the purpose is to protect children, and hospitals that don't follow the new regulations will be punished.
To reinforce the need to protect our children, we are announcing that certified Medicare and Medicaid hospitals, pretty much everyone in the hospital in the country, will no longer be permitted to perform certain sex-rejecting procedures on children. Any hospital that does offer sex-rejecting procedures to vulnerable populations of pediatric-age kids will no longer be able to participate in the Medicare and Medicaid program.
For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy.
Those were news headlines from Pacifica Radio. You are listening to Sojourner Truth with new co-host, Nana Jumpy. Today on Sojourner Truth, we reconnect with the ever-brilliant Henna Hundel, and we want to close out strong by raising at least $1,000 on this, the last show of KPFK's Fund Drive. Thanks to all of you who have already supported this station and this show. And if you haven't already done so, please feel free to become a KPFK sustainer now for just about $20 a month by calling us at 818-985-5735. More on Sojourner Truth Radio after this short music break.
Crying out for justice. Everyone is crying out for peace. Yeah.
You are listening to Sojourner Truth with co-host Nana Jumpy. We knew we wanted to talk about climate crisis as part of our year in review, and so we had to reconnect with Henna Hundel to make sure we did it right, especially in light of COP30 in Brazil. Henna Hundel is a four-time delegate to the UN Climate Change Conferences, the National Coordinator of Climate Live USA, and a freelance writer covering the intersection of climate and health. Greetings, Henna. So great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, as always.
So, you know, it's the end of the year. We got to do that year in review. And I'm pleased. I think we did a decent job this year on Sojourner Truth, per usual. I didn't let our sister Margaret down in the conversation about the climate, which, as we know, really impacts millions and millions of vulnerable folks who are often not the people who are causing the climate crisis in the same kind of way. And so something we definitely want to keep our attention on. Let's start with looking at, because, you know, we know that there's so much that we've had to deal with in terms of the things people typically think of when they think of climate crisis, changes in weather and hurricanes and, you know, those pieces. But we know there's a lot more. And we know that people have been fighting really hard this year to get us on the right track, both in this country and in the world. So let's start off with the roses part of our year in review. You know, 3-4 things maybe that you've seen that show that all is not lost. We are not defeated. And in fact, we're making some headways.
Oh, thank you for that beautiful question. I think it is very important to highlight the successes, the progress, because that's what keeps us moving. That's the light through the dark tunnels. And so I really appreciate the question. And I think it's been top of mind for me coming recently from Belém, Brazil, where the UN Climate Change Conference, COP30, was held. And what was really interesting being there, it was held on the edge of the Amazon. So a very meaningful location chosen intentionally, deliberately by the Brazilian government to make the delegates feel the heat. Literally, very important to be there and to see what most of the world is enduring and will continue to endure if the climate crisis reaches its peak. And I will say, overwhelming rose that became apparent to me during the course of the conference was the intensive, extensive involvement of community activism, of civil society. We saw so many Indigenous activists really make waves and make a lot of important noise at the conference and help push through measures that probably would not have gotten into the final pact, the final agreement that emerged from the conference if that activism wasn't there. At one point in time in the conference, there was a group of activists who actually stormed the entrance, and it really set up this juxtaposition between these activists who are demanding accountability for their communities that have been ravaged by the climate crisis disproportionately compared to the communities that have had more of a role in actually, you know, propagating the crisis as it is, a juxtaposition between that and, you know, fossil fuel lobbyists inside the conference. And so I think that contrast is really stark and important to see. And it was amazing that even during a time when there's so much doom and gloom around the direction of climate change, you really see community engagement, activists, people banding together, using the power of their voice, the power of collective action to kind of sort of remember how a lot of change ends up happening, which is just one person caring and creating a ripple effect from that. So that was a big takeaway for me. I think also, you know, at the conference, we saw a lot of measures to really try to help people understand the everyday impacts of climate change. What does it look like on the ground? And towards that end, I would say another rose was the adoption of the Belém Health Action Plan, which is essentially a measure to understand that we have to a lot of adaptation to do to deal with the impacts of climate change on the ground. When we think about, for example, fire seasons increasing in duration, heat waves increasing in frequency and intensity and duration, hurricanes, tropical cyclones increasing in intensity, the impacts of what communities face, whether they're able to rebuild from that, whether the healthcare systems are durable enough to withstand those challenges and provide the care needed, not only during the crisis, but in the aftermath. For example, a lot of times, you know, communities will see spikes in PTSD and stress responses to some of these crises. Are there actually structures to deal with that? I mean, I think the passage of that plan at the conference was a first step toward acknowledging that we need to pay attention to these wide-ranging impacts on the ground. So I would say those are two real roses of the conference. And I would also say kind of in general, the rose of this year was the fact that, you know, we had outcomes come from COP30, despite so much uncertainty heading into the conference. Of course, this is a time when there's sort of a fraying of geopolitical solidarity around climate action, geopolitical tensions simmering everywhere. And there were a lot of questions about, for example, with the lack of the United States participation in the conference, whether we would see any meaningful outcomes emerge. And I think we did. And so I would sort of summarize those three high points of the conference as the roses of the year when we think about where we made progress and where we can continue to do so going into 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking also about the ways in which I feel, and you know, maybe I'm just noticing it myself, but the ways in which people really, I think this year, and were able to focus on those more vulnerable communities, were able to see the intersections between climate crisis and racism, climate crisis and imperialism, right? And colonialism and neocolonialism, the way in which you have folks with different, you know, countries with different economic powers impacting what is happening with countries that may not have that same level of economic powers, right? The imbalance of economic power and its impact on climate crisis. And maybe some of that is because you have a superpower, quote unquote, like the United States, not engaged. Therefore, more activists, more organizers, more countries that are really concerned about these issues being able to be in the forefront in terms of media and other more visible spaces. Your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I think that contrast really speaks for itself. You know, when we think about the United States being the largest historical emitter of greenhouse gases, and we think about, you know, activists coming to the conference from indigenous communities in the heart of the Amazon saying, where's the accountability? That was huge. And in a way, you know, COP 30 was really billed as the accountability COP, the action COP, where, you know, there's been so many promises made over the years. For example, funding, climate financing to enable developing countries to execute on some of these adaptations that can help communities withstand the impacts of climate change. Where is that funding? Is it actually flowing in the way that it was pledged? A lot of promises and pledges have been made, and now it's really time to focus on that accountability piece. And I think this COP had some strides in that regard, but of course, we always have to keep our eye on the ball.
Yes, and thinking of keeping our eye on the ball, we know, of course, that there are also still challenges, right? Mm-hmm. Thorns. Every rose got its thorns, right? So we know that there are thorns, that there are challenges, and that there are gaps. Let's start with the challenges that we know we're, you know, surfaced, some of them old challenges, maybe some of them new, that surfaced in this year, 2025, as we look at climate crisis and the work that people are pushing for.
Yeah. You know, when we think about thorns, about challenges, that's pretty prominent, pretty at the forefront of mind for those of us engaged in this issue who live in the United States. Because there has been a lot of progress made over the years, and we particularly saw that under the Biden administration, and so much of that has been rolled back in just a few short months. And when we think about what the future holds, I think there's reason to be concerned. So, for example, it was just announced recently that the National Center for Atmospheric Research is going to be dismantled. When we think about regulations around pollution, for example, also the rescinding of the endangerment finding, which was a 2009 rule that essentially enables the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gases vis-a-vis the Clean Air Act. All of this infrastructure that has been in place, sometimes quietly, sometimes not noticeable to us, but we are reaping the benefits from it. And I think what has been especially concerning is to see that gutting, that repealing, that rescinding, that uprooting of that core infrastructure, you know, the rules, the regulations, all of that that underpins the capacity that we have to execute on climate action in a meaningful way. The questions run, are we actually going to be able to rebuild all of that in the future? Will there be the morale to do so, the political courage to do so? It's going to take a lot of time, effort, energy, attention, money to rebuild all that we are destroying right now in terms of that policy infrastructure to actually enable the climate action that we need. And I think we've seen that dismantling come in full force this year. And that has definitely been a thorn, a reason for concern, and something we, you know, can't let fall by the wayside or be put on the back burner, even though there are so many concerns to occupy one's mind, particularly at this moment in history.
And thinking about how we address that dismantling, because yes, it's very difficult to rebuild, or it takes more energy, takes more time to rebuild. And as you know, for a lot of our organizations and networks, we've been talking about, and in some cases executing, so what we're describing as a build and block strategy, mm-hmm. right? And so how do we build the power that we need to have in order to block some of what is going on, understanding that we don't have control, for example, in the United States of the, you know, all of the levers, right? It's not like you can just snap your fingers and the president does what you want them to do, or the executive does what you want them to do, and, you know, or Congress, and even when you look on the local and state level. But there is some movement that people are trying to do on the local and state level in terms of power building with community and blocking. And some of that, I think, is translating onto the federal level. So what do you see people doing on the building side of this in terms of building power with community in order to really have the force to block and to rebuild when that time comes?
Yeah. You know, I think what's so key is fortifying our side such that climate action is not a rollover issue. It's not a back burner issue. And this notion that these structures, this infrastructure, these policies, procedures that protect us, the notion that they can be undone quietly, you know, the people who think that are sorely mistaken. I think one great example of that is there's recently a couple of organizations got together and they filed a challenge to the Trump administration's hold on federal funding for electric vehicle charging. You know, really keeping an eye on what's actually being rolled back, what's happening, using any legal levers at our disposal to try to slow that down. And then also continuing to talk about it, you know, in the media, writing articles, making sure that this topic stays at the forefront, despite so many other issues going on right now. And there's obviously no shortage of things to say, to write about, to focus on. It's very, very easy for an issue like climate change that has almost a slow build in its impact, in its deleterious impact. It's very easy to let that be on the back burner while we focus on all these other issues. And, you know, it's sort of hard to divvy our attention sometimes, but within our community, within the community of those of us who care about climate change and care about mitigating it and rolling, you know, some of this destruction back, it's really important to fortify our side and to not let this stuff go unnoticed. And I think, you know, for example, having conversations with you, highlighting some of the stuff on the show, that's part of it. That's the first step. And so I think that's what's encouraging. And I hope more people will continue to do that. We have local representatives who are more accessible. Talk to them. Make sure that this is not an issue that gets buried in the next 3 years of this administration. And hopefully we can sort of stymie and avert some of this destruction so we have less to have to rebuild after the fact.
Thank you for that. Really important to, you know, because when things become invisible, they just become invisible. You know, and folks don't pay attention until it's too late. You know, it's like I was sitting at a hotel recently in Houston and I was thinking to myself, I would be really traumatized if a big tidal wave suddenly came through this window. And but that's happened to people. Do you know what I'm saying? And Houston is nowhere near water. So I knew I wasn't in danger of that allegedly. But it just occurred to me just how real and palpable that is for so many people. The coalition building is also a part of what a lot of us are looking at and have been doing and are really intensifying in our effort to have some of the issues we're really concerned about become more mass, right? In terms of people thinking about them on a more mass level, not in the siloed type of ways. And so a couple of things I want to, you know, get your thoughts on. Number one, always very surprised to learn and hear that when it comes to young people, that young people, and you know, in the United States, you can be 35 and be young. So I don't know how young these people are, but young people, as they're described in the United States, across political spectrum, are concerned about the climate and concerned about the environment and concerned about climate crisis. So I, you know, want to see if you have any thoughts about that. And then about cross-movement coalition building so that, for example, as we're doing work with Black Alliance and Just for Just Immigration, Baji, in the areas of racial justice and immigrant rights, which is like our bread and butter or rice and beans, we're looking at workers, right? So we're looking at the labor unit. We're looking at healthcare, the way that $170 billion has been snatched away from the social service net and thrown into invasions of the body snatchers. What's happening within that space, or is there anything happening in that space? And maybe what more could be happening, right? So looking at political spectrum, sort of across political spectrum, but also cross movement.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I would also add a point to your earlier statement about, you know, some of the trauma that communities endure in the aftermath of environmental calamities. We, of course, remember last year, devastating Hurricane Milton following Hurricane Helene, you know, Hurricane Milton making landfall in Florida. And one of the communities it made landfall in had already braved several other, you know, hurricanes that year. And so there was a lot of, you know, documentation, people telling their stories about how they almost sometimes don't have the funds to be able to afford to move, but they're sort of watching their homes get destroyed again and again, year after year. And there's only so much of that people can take. It really does leave a profound impact when we think about the sense of grief, of loss, of uprootedness, that people are experiencing currently, that young people talk about when they're trying to figure out where are they going to settle in the future, where's the safest place to raise a family. When we think about, for example, where Hurricane Helene made landfall, it was very unexpected in that community in North Carolina. So, you know, these are ever-present questions. And of course, we really do not have the infrastructure in place right now to not also the physical safety of, you know, people surviving these calamities, but certainly the mental health component that can far outlast you know, the landfall after it makes landfall and the flooding, et cetera. So absolutely very grateful that you highlighted that. And I, for the coalition building question, it is interesting because there's certainly a difference in terms, and the data has borne this out, in terms of the level of concern among young Republicans versus older Republicans about the environment. So for example, there was a Gallup study done and they asked participants about the their worry regarding the quality of the environment. We saw for young Republicans aged 18 to 34, around 32% said a great deal. They worried a great deal about the quality of the environment. And 37% of that 18 to 34-year-old block said that they worried a fair amount about the quality of the environment. And that's much lower, of course, when you look at the 55 and older category. And so really among young people across the political spectrum, there is an opportunity, an interesting and has yet to be fully capitalized upon opportunity for coalition building around climate. I've certainly in my conversations about this issue, documenting the climate crisis, come across a lot of young conservatives who are, you know, sort of call themselves climate conservatives, climate forward conservatives or climate conscious conservatives, recognizing that the environmental concerns are real. They're here, they're in the now, but they're also magnified and going to impact their own futures probably a lot more than some of their older counterparts. And so I think that's an area that really has to be looked more into. How do we build these, you know, across the aisle partnerships? Because I think, unfortunately, right now, climate change is very much framed as a left versus right issue. When really we see it's a right versus wrong issue. And a lot of young people are identifying it as certainly wrong to subject themselves, their children, and their futures to the whims of climate change when there's so much we can do to avert it.
More Sojourner Truth Radio after this short station break.
Yeah, I've been listening to KPFK for years, you know, on and off. It's a good voice that we need right now, very much so. And I love that I can be in different places all over California and, you know, still listen to you. And online, it's great. You know, there's so much corporate crap out there. You know, that they can't be honest. People are going to get fired for what they say. You guys are, you know, really carrying on the torch for a lot of good voices that aren't being heard right now.
Hi, this is Angelique Kidjo, and you're listening to People Powered Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. If you believe in radio not sponsored by corporations but sponsored by you, the people, please call and make your pledge at 818-985-5735. That is 818-985-5735. 5735. Peace and love.
Our conversation, Hannah. What about cross movement, right? In terms of, like, is there work that you're, you know, or do we see gaps or do we see structures and systems when it comes to connecting the work and the activism around climate crisis to, for example, worker rights or to immigration, because we know we have climate refugees, or to issues relating to racial justice? Like, how is that working? How is that coming together? Is that coming together, looking at it as a potential gap that could use some shoring up?
You know, I think there are some interesting examples. So, for example, Tuvalu is a country in the Pacific, a Pacific island country that has also been ravaged by climate change, as many island developing nations have been, you know, coastal erosion, and so much movement and migration happening internally because of what climate change has wrought, that recently we actually saw Australia extend the first climate visas. That's what it was actually called. And so the first ever climate migrants arrived from Tuvalu in Australia just in the past week. Now, of course, this is a matter where, you know, you've had activists, especially from some of these island developing nations, really trying to highlight the issue of climate change and wanting action on it, not necessarily hoping that it would lead to them having to leave their homelands. In fact, they wanted action mitigation that would prevent that, but also recognizing that, unfortunately, we haven't quite gotten there, reached that threshold. And so some of that activism has led to an understanding among the so-called big emitters, the historical big emitters, that perhaps some of their accountability will come from, you know, being able to offer a home, a refuge to those who have been most impacted by climate change. So I think that's kind of an example of where there's been bridges built between activism and actual policies that have an impact in some way, whether it be mitigation or adaptation or kind of shoring up, being a stopgap to the issue. Kind of wish we had more of an equal distribution among mitigation and adaptation, but, you know, either way, at least it's something, you know, it's some win. I also think, you know, we see recently the International Court of Justice, the UN's top court, rendered an advisory opinion on climate change, the first time it had addressed the issue in this way. And we know, you know, advisory opinions, they're non-binding from the ICJ. However, the court's opinion was essentially that, you know, countries, when they've been part of these agreements, for example, at COP conferences, it said they're obliged to follow through on those agreements. So I think it'll be really interesting to see that juxtaposed with, you know, the actions, for example, that the Trump administration is taking, because, of course, the U.S. has been part of these agreements for many years. Can they actually recuse themselves fully, or will there be some sort of legal model that's developed to prevent that from happening now and also stave off, you know, any other countries getting ideas of the sort? So I think, and you know, that measure, the ability for the ICJ to actually render that opinion, was also brought forth by Pacific Island activists. Who were able to take that to the top court, and you had, you know, young, fresh law students really interested in this issue and pushed for it to be heard at the highest levels of justice. So I think that illustrates that, you know, in many parts of the world, there are pockets where you still see that youthful energy being willing to take these issues all the way to the top, cut through the bureaucratic red tape, you know, really elevate it in a way that they haven't seen done in their lifetimes, but they feel incumbent to do so, given the unique role that climate change will play in the course of their lives.
And that, I think, leans us into our opportunities, right? The buds on this rose bush here. Because, yes, there are challenges. We know there are gaps. We know that there are things that are wins and forward movement. What are some of the opportunities that we might push forward, that people might try to, you know, to cling on to, grab on to, get involved in trying to activate? When we look forward into 2026 and beyond?
Yeah, you know, I think at kind of a bird's eye view or high level, we are seeing a lot of interest in renewable energy. And as in the United States, you know, the Trump movement, the Trump administration are really pushing for oil and gas and almost a regression to greenhouse gases, these forms of energy that we're trying to get away from, you know, at least those of us who care about climate change. We're seeing in other parts of the world, people identify that as an opportunity to step into this leadership vacuum and try to make headway on renewables. So we've seen in Asia billions of dollars in investment in renewable technologies and research around renewable technologies. What's also really interesting is we're seeing you know, unexpected alliances forming. So recently, the European Union and China actually came to an agreement that and issued a statement regarding matters of climate change, that, you know, agreements that have been made need to be kept, and almost kind of signaling that there needs to be stability in terms of the climate agreements that have been reached and what's actually executed from here on out, that, you know, climate change can't really be on the chopping block amidst all the chaos going on right now in terms of policies, procedures, norms being rolled back. So that was a really interesting development to see that kind of alliance forming in this way around climate change is very unexpected. We should welcome the opportunity for countries all around the world to try to step up and be leaders right now where, you know, unfortunately, I really wish the U.S. was continuing its role in that regard. But I think that's a bright spot. That's, you know, something on the horizon, that the fact that, you know, alliances can emerge when you least expect it. And I think certainly on climate change, an issue that is going to affect all parts of the globe, nobody is or can count on being immune, and everyone has a role to play in help mitigating it. It's very important to see these alliances form and people reach across the aisle, extend outstretched hands, And I certainly hope to see that in the political climate in the U.S., left versus right, Democrats and Republicans uniting around this issue, and certainly on a geopolitical stage, opportunities for the big emitters and those most impacted by climate change to connect and to form these partnerships that are very important. We saw a glimpse of that in 2025, but hopefully that's magnified in the coming year.
And what about folks who are engaged in the activism themselves? Because when we have something like a COP that happens, you know, you have folks from all over the world that are able to come to be a part. As you said, you have indigenous folks that are were already there in Brazil. You had other indigenous folks that came from all over South America, Central America, the continent of Africa, the Caribbean. You have people who are, you know, came from the movement for Black Lives here in the United States. You have folks that were coming in from Europe, right? So you have people coming from all over the world who are not the lobbyists and who are not the representatives of the countries, but who are the people who are actually on the ground doing work, having conversations with each other, comparing notes, you know, sharing ideas, et cetera. What opportunities, having been to COP, this last COP in Belém, what opportunities do you see for those folks on the ground who are pushing for the world we need and deserve?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. You know, I think, first of all, sort of organizing in community, not alone, understanding that climate can be connected to so many other issues that perhaps have more visibility at times. For example, the economy, public health, air quality. Climate change is connected to all of those. The quality of our environment determines the quality of our public health. You know, what we pay for our electricity bills in this inflationary economy where everything is costing an arm and a leg. When we think about the cost of energy, well, you know, the climate conversation is part of that, and the move toward renewables is part of that. And so being willing to identify these areas of overlap, intersection, and being able to work with groups across the aisle, I think is so important, because there's so much more capacity for that mutual collaboration than we're engaging with right now. I think, of course, when we think about the people we're putting in office, vote, especially at a local level where there's much more capacity to show up to city council meetings, to comment on agency rules or back ballot measures that will have an outsized impact for your own community, where, for example, you're directly breathing the air. So there's actually a lot of potential to shape measures there that needs to be harnessed upon more. I also think, you know, protecting the science is incredibly important. So, of course, there's been so much heartbreaking rollback of you know, funding for institutions that are doing great research and the centers that have been really important for measuring changes in the environment over time and really tracking climate change, knowing, making sure that we have that data. Obviously, you don't want to have that data because that data tells a very particular story, which is that we need action on this issue. And so, unfortunately, we've seen cuts there. Support those institutions, those researchers, those journalists doing credible climate coverage and public health work. You know, there are so many, you know, now on Substack, you know, or Patreon, people can sort of create their own accounts and have freelance work. And it's, I think it's really up to us to support those people who are still fighting the good fight and doing good work and exposing some of these problems that are being shoved under the rug right now. And so I think those are measures that just as individuals, we can take and engage in a relatively easy way. You know, it's picking the low-hanging fruit, but that fruit is picked nonetheless. And, you know, there's really a real capacity for ripple impacts. And I hope people recognize that.
More Sojourner Truth Radio after this short station break.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. You're listening to Radical Free Speech Radio, KPFK in Los Angeles.
You are listening to Sojourner Truth with your co-host, Nana Jumpy, speaking with Henna Hundle. Thank you for highlighting the science piece that needs to be supported, because I think often people think, because people are passionate, and as you said, these are not necessarily things that are so easily connected in real time in terms of what is happening with emissions and then what is happening with climate, that people think that it's you know, abracadabra sounds more like magic or vibes than actual science, right? And so the support of the science piece and the research piece is really important. Thank you so very much, Henna. It is always fabulous having you on. If folks want to follow you and your work, where do they go?
Oh, such an honor, as always, to connect with you. Thank you so much for having me on the program and also for covering this really important topic. I mean, this is the first step. So thank you so much for everything you do to highlight climate change. Honor to be with you. And absolutely, if anyone wants to follow my work, the easiest way to do so would be to find me on Twitter. I'm at Henna Hundal, HennaHundal on Twitter, on X. I post a lot of my clips of my radio, television appearances, my writing, interesting, you know, pieces to talking about this issue, hopefully getting the creative juices flowing, talk about the problems, but also trying to inspire solutions. So yeah, please follow me there and get in touch.
Thank you so much, Henna. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. That was Henna Hundal, four-time delegate to the UN Climate Change Conferences and the National Coordinator of Climate Live USA. That's our show. I'd like to thank our guest. I'd like to thank our executive director, Maggie LaPique, the Sojourner Truth team, including my dear sister, Margaret Prescott, our board operator, Ozzy Flamenco, producer, Gary Scott. And of course, I want to thank you for your continued support of this show and of this station. We really want to close out this fun drive with a solid last push. So we're joined now by KPFK's executive director, Maggie LaPique, and they're joining now to bring us home. Maggie, thanks so much for joining us, for coming on, making sure that we're raising money for this station, and also for your continued support of Sojourner Truth Radio. Remember, find ways to be well in the midst of it all. One love.
Thank you, Nana Jumpy. Hold tight, folks.
You know the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through.
Welcome, folks, to the closing of our end-of-year giving fund drive. I'm Maggie LaPique. I'm the interim general manager, music director, promotions director. I don't know. I could just keep going, folks. But there's a lot of us here wearing many hats. But it's a privilege to work for this radio station. And folks, we've got about 15 minutes left in the hour. This is really the home stretch, if you know what I'm talking about. This is, you know, we say home stretch, we start that about a week before, but this is it. And we are extremely close to our goal. We're just short about $1,500. So I'm thinking, you know, hey, what can we do to try to get folks to jump to the phones? Mainly to keep KPFK on the air. Joining me in studio is Ozzy Flamenco. He's a wonderful engineer, board operator here at KPFK. Comes from the journalism, but the broadcast department at LA Valley College. We're so happy to have him on board. Ozzy, it's been, you know, it seems like a long drive, but, it's just been about a little over 2 weeks, about, you know, two and a half. And we want to go out with a bang. And I know you're a big fan of The Doors. And folks, we've got something special that we want to offer, because these were found in boxes of the Pacifica Radio Archives not too long ago. And it's a 2-CD set, the very best of the Doors. And John Densmore had signed them some years ago for, I think it was a special that we did on John Coltrane. And so we offered this set that John had signed. So I recently went over to Robbie Krieger's studio, and he just signed him the other day. So now we've got Robbie Krieger in black marker. Ozzy, you can see that, right?
Oh, it looks beautiful, definitely.
So now I had you on mic two, now you're on mic three.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. That red and black detail of those autographs, definitely a good way to support KPFK.
So we've got this, you know, one-of-a-kind collector's item. Robbie Krieger, it's on the cardboard box that this 2-CD set comes in. Robbie Krieger and John Densmore signing, you know, this wonderful collection of, you know, the greatest hits of the Doors. And it's a $150 pledge to KPFK. But if you want to pledge more, I told Ozzy, if you want to pledge $200, $250, if you're okay with that, we'd love to get, you know, the highest bidder. Because, I mean, it's $150. It's totally up to you. But we do need $1,500 before the top of the hour. And we've got not too many minutes to go to reach that goal. But I know we can do it. And there might be an angel out there that could pony up, you know, $1,000 or $500. And that would get us there really fast. So, folks, the number to call, I know it's a number that you're probably sick to death of. And hearing to hit option two. But just in case, 818-985-5735. Press two, and that'll get you to Terry Guy in the subscriptions room. It's kind of lonely right now, Ozzy. It's me and you and Terry.
And the phone number, 985-5735, option two.
That's it.
It's a cool gift. It's been archived, so it's been sitting in a special location just for you, that person that wants to call right now and support. 985-5735, option two.
Exactly. So that's a $150 pledge. You can get the very best of the Doors 2-CD collection signed by Robbie Krieger in black, you know, black marker, and for John Densmore, a red one. And then the Doors is actually in red, and the Jim Morrison on the cover, a very sexy Jim Morrison, by the way, with no shirt on. So here's the songs on the collection. We just started with Break On Through to the Other Side, and we can just keep going and going and going. Now we've got Strange Days, and these are strange days, let me tell you. And that's why you need KPFK more than ever. Alabama Song, Whiskey Bar, that's coming up next. Love Me Two Times, Light My Fire, Spanish Caravan, The Crystal Ship, The Unknown Soldier, The End. We want to play The End at the end of the hour. We don't want to get there yet. We want to raise that $1,500 in a pinch so that we can just get us right over the top of our goal that we set, our overall goal for the station. 818-985-5735, option two.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar.
And it's Friday night. A lot of people going to whiskey bars. I'm not going. I know Ozzy's not going. But hey, if you're going to a whiskey bar and you're a fan of the Doors, we've got something very special to offer you. Signed copies by the two surviving members of the Doors, Robbie Krieger and John Densmore. It's a two-disc set, the very best of the Doors. And I was here when John signed them, and I was picked them up just the other day where Marco, the wonderful engineer at Robbie's studio, said he was with Robbie and he just signed him, and I got him, and it's authentic, folks. A real collector's item. Pledge $150. That's the minimum. But if you want to do a little bit more, we would so appreciate it, because we're just a little bit shy of our overall goal for the station. 818-985-5735. option two. And we just sent a dispatch out today, and we titled it, "We're Close, and We Can't Afford to Slow Down Now." This moment is crucial. We've got real forward momentum for the first time in a long while, stabilizing the station and fixing things that were neglected for years. But we're still short of our goal, and that's the truth. That's the double truth, Ruth. And the next few minutes will determine whether we keep moving forward or have to pause progress once again. We don't want to do that. We've made very important headway, folks. We are about at 50% of the work on our transmitter, and we're having to install a new electrical system up in Mount Wilson. And I have a separate campaign going for that. We want to thank the folks that are stepping up for that. But if you're able to contribute right now, even a modest gift, become a sustainer for $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20, $25 a month, whatever you're comfortable with. We do have some great other gifts besides the Doors, the signed Doors 2 CD set. And those are very limited, folks. So if you love the Doors and you want to get something that you know is a real collector's item, you better call quick. Also, what John Wiener was talking about just in the a little bit earlier today on his show, Living in the USA, a magnificent new bootleg series from Sony Legacy Through the Open Door, 1956 to 1963, highlights very early Bob Dylan. I mean, just, you know, blow your mind, Bob Dylan. $100 pledge. Jimi Hendrix Experience, Axis Bold as Love. It's a 4-CD Blu-ray set. That's a $160 pledge. And then another popular thank you gift for this end-of-year drive, Golden Oldies 3-CD set. I played from this Wednesday on some special programming and did very well. $100 pledge, over 60 tracks. The Beatles, the Beach Boys, Nina Simone, Buddy Holly, Ray Charles, and so many others. It's a really eclectic, fantastic collection. Also, Tom Hartman, The Last American President, A Broken Man, A Corrupt Party, and A World on the Brink. And that's the truth. Again, the double truth, Ruth. $100 donation to KPFK. And lastly, in the top, you know, 10, less than 10, thank you gifts for this drive, KPFA's Chris Hedges Digital Speech Collection. And that's many, many hours for a $100 pledge to KPFK. And it was updated, the digital speech collection from the event they did earlier this year in May. 818-985-5735. We also host an event. I believe ours was in September. We love Chris Hedges. And if you appreciate all of these voices, voices from around the world and around the block, just like the Global Village, call us right now, 818-985-5735, option 2. Pledge online, kpfk.org. Yeah.
Love me one time. Could not speak. Love me one time, baby. Yeah, my knees got weak. Don't you love her madly? Or don't you need her badly? Don't you love her ways? Or tell me what you say.
Love her madly. So the tracks, there's 15 on the first CD, which we're listening to now. Or no, we're listening to actually disc 2. And There's 19 tracks on this one, all the greatest hits from the Doors. And the cover on the outside, the beautiful cover picture of Jim, signed by Robbie Krieger and John Densmore. That's a $150 pledge to KPFK. We're literally $500 away from getting over the hump to reach our goal. And folks, come on. I know you're out there. You appreciate the work that we do. All of these incredible voices on this radio station. We are moving it forward, but we can't do it without you. And we've got to reach the goal that we set. Get out your Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover. We need, in the next 4 minutes, $500. And I'm hoping that we get a little bit extra. But do whatever you can. $25 pledge, $50 pledge, $75 pledge. $150 will get you this amazing 2-CD set. The very best of the Doors, signed by Robbie Krieger and John Densmore. Unbelievable. What a gift this would make for the Doors, you know, the lover that you have in your family, or, you know, your partner, cousin, uncle. And they're here, ready to be shipped. We have a very limited number of these. I'm not getting word from Terry how many have gone, but I know we have some more left. So call us right now and secure your copy of The Very Best of the Doors, signed by two beautiful human beings, Robbie Krieger and John Densmore, who have been so important to this radio station because they support it, and they are, you know, both very philanthropic, and they care about this world. They're just beautiful human beings, and we know you're a beautiful human being too because you're listening to KPFK. 818-985-5735, option 2. Ozzy, we got about less than 3 minutes left. What are we going to do?
Yo, this is a great opportunity right now to gift that person what we're giving you right now. We're obviously making sure that, you know, you have an option here. So support KPFK. Support, you know, the voices that you hear on KPFK. Maggie has been putting it in real easy words. It's our last stretch, and we're in need of your help to catch up. It's the holiday season. This is a great opportunity to make sure to support KPFK if you've been waiting the whole year. So this is your time. 985-5735, option 2. And if you find yourself in front of your handy dandy computer, go to kpfk.org. That's another solid option to take advantage of. That's 985-5735 or kpfk.org.
Absolutely. 818-985-5735. That's the number to call. And I love Riders on the Storm, but we got to go out with this one, because this is one that Robbie Krieger wrote. This was his first song. Can you imagine? He was like, I don't even think he was, you know, 20 years old.
That is wild, because you could tell that it sounds different from what Jim Morrison was writing.
Yes, and it was Jim that worked with him that said, you know, talk about the elements, you know, fire, water, you know, the things that, you know, mean so much to us. And what a song he came up with. But folks, we're about a minute and a half away. We have to check out because we've got the evening news coming up next. And I'm looking at the numbers, and we're still short, so I don't know what to say. We need you to call in right now, 818-985-5735, about $400 short of the goal that could take us right over the top to reach our goal. We're so close. Pick up your copy of The Very Best of the Doors, signed by Robbie Krieger and John Densmore. It's a mere $150 pledge to KPFK. Put this on your Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and or pick up any of the other gifts that we've been featuring throughout the drive that you've heard about and that you're super excited about. You have been excited about many of them, like the Jimi Hendrix box set, Axis Bold as Love, the fantastic Bob Dylan set. And as I said at the beginning, we're close, and we can't afford to slow down now. This moment in time is crucial. You need KPFK more than ever. Ozzy, we're going to have to say goodbye.
We just gotta
We got to break on through to the other side.
Make that move right now. 955735, option 2. That's a pretty cool doors gift for somebody, for an associate, a family member. Great option.
Absolutely. So I want to thank all of our wonderful staff and beautiful volunteers. But always the biggest thanks goes to you, our fantastic, and we couldn't live without you listeners, because you're the steam that makes this engine go. We love you. Keep listening. Keep supporting real people-powered radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. I'm Angela Peak. For Ozzy Flamenco, we're out.